Welcome to The Dirt on Organic Farming, a podcast from the Organic Agronomy Training Service. Our aim is to bring skeptical agronomists and crop consultants into the organic conversation by analyzing six common criticisms and openly discussing the sometimes messy promise of the organic opportunity. The podcast format combines expert interviews with real-world examples to get beyond us versus them and towards a more informed understanding of organic agriculture. I'm Nate Powell-Palm.
And I'm Mallory Krieger.
We're the hosts of The Dirt on Organic Farming.
Well, I guess I hear all of those same questions that you're trying to address, simply that the data doesn't support organic production systems.
The most common reaction I get is, well, isn't that going backwards? It's like, you know, we have all these very effective tools. Why wouldn't you use them?
In this episode, Farming Like It's 1921, Organic is Anti-Science. General Mills is a proud sponsor of oats. As the largest producer of natural and organic packaged food in the U.S., the company is committed to supporting farmers in transitioning to organic and promoting continuous improvement of organic standards and practices. Learn more at generalmills.com. Oats is brought to you with funding support from Stonyfield. As the country's leading organic yogurt maker, Stonyfield takes care with everything it puts into its products and everything it keeps out. By saying no to toxic, persistent pesticides, artificial hormones, antibiotics, and GMOs, Stonyfield is saying yes to healthy food, healthy people, and a healthy planet for 38 years. Stonyfield is a certified B Corp and is also helping to protect and preserve the next generation of farmers and families through programs like its Direct Milk Supply and Wolf's Neck Organic Training Program, as well as Stonyfields, a nationwide multi-year initiative to help keep families free from toxic, persistent pesticides in parks and playing fields across the country. Welcome to episode 3. In the first two episodes of this podcast, we explored the pressing issues of tillage and weeds in organic agriculture. In this episode, we're going to zoom out and explore the criticism that organic has a rough relationship with science. I spend a lot of time with farmers who farm organically, and I see some of the most amazing innovation and creativity in the way that they maintain high productivity and how they turn a profit, all while stewarding the environment. And when I think about all of those benefits, both to the farmers and to the environments that organic production practices bring, it really draws to mind some conversations that I've had with a cousin of mine. This cousin is a conventional grain farmer, and I've been talking with him for years about organic farming practices and have been really trying to get him to consider transitioning, but he absolutely will not consider transition. And when I ask him why, his answer to me is that he wants the benefits of 100 years of farming research. He doesn't want to farm the way that our grandpa did. And so this makes a lot of sense to me when I think about his personality. He is an engineer by training. He loves data and he loves research and technology. And when he looks at all of the innovations that have happened over the century, this past century in agriculture, he doesn't see a place for that in organic farming.
Well, I think this is such an interesting criticism too, because when I examine my own farming practices, I just don't see a lot of similarities between how I farm and how they farmed 100 years ago. A lot of the tillage equipment I use wasn't even invented 100 years ago. And I think when I look at my rotation, there's a lot of plants in my rotation, a lot of different crops that weren't adapted to Montana. They weren't grown in Montana really 100 years ago. And so I think when we talk about innovation, I'd like to also kind of zoom out even a little bit further and talk about, there are lots of advancements in areas other than just chemistry in organics.
Well, to unpack this dense topic, I reached out first to Dr. Claire Keene. She's an extension agronomist with North Dakota State University, where she supports organic and conventional farmers with their questions on crop management.
I'd like to start with just acknowledging that organic farmers are certainly the folks working in grain production, so corn, soybean, wheat, other small grains, and then certainly in states like North Dakota and South Dakota, those organic farmers are working at a large scale. It may not be as large as their conventional neighbors, but there are organic farmers managing 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 acres. And so they are using large tractors, large air seeders, and then their tillage equipment and weed management tools are at a scale appropriate to the scale that they are farming. And so that is extremely different from how things were done 100 years ago when someone might be pulling a two-bottom plow with, you know, a couple of horses. You know, 100 years ago, even people taking advantage of the most current technology of their day were managing maybe 80, 100, 200 acres. There's some exceptions to that, but it was at a smaller scale with very different equipment. Modern organic farmers are using large-scale equipment. They're certainly taking advantage of precision agriculture and using not only auto-steer, but RTK and other precision planting and in-field management equipment, keeping track of things with yield maps, looking for differences in soil type, and thinking about how to manage perhaps different areas of their farm differently. So certainly the equipment really isn't that different in terms of scale. And then taking advantage of all the improvements we have with our modern, you know, planting equipment, you get much more accurate seed placement, the ability to meter seed appropriately and, you know, get more accurate plant populations. Organic farmers can take advantage of all those things, and they do, especially if they're working at those larger scales in grain production.
While organic takes advantage of the same mechanical technology advancements as conventional agriculture, something that's really important to look at is the framework that underlies the questions that conventional agriculture research asks, and how that might not be the right approach.
Well, speaking for, you know, myself personally, I would hope that I would never come across as telling someone, you know, who's not farming organically that they're wrong, because I don't think that's true at all. I think that there's an amazing amount of benefits that have come from the model of conventional agriculture currently practiced on most of the acres in the United States. We have, you know, generally pretty high yields and very consistent quality, and it has allowed the development of a food system that generally has access to pretty cheap inputs. And I think that it's both good and bad. It's good from the perspective that Americans in general don't spend, you know, nearly as much of their earned income on food as people in other countries, and so it frees up our income for other things and other sectors of the economy. Yet it also feeds into generally speaking, you know, low prices for those commodities that farmers produce, and feeds back into the cycle of producing crops with a low profit margin per bushel, and so needing to produce more bushels and needing to manage more acres to try and make it work. But so there are a lot of things that model doesn't account for. So yeah, we've gotten really good at doing large scale corn, soybean, and wheat production using a lot of synthetic fertilizer and pesticides. And we're now seeing the consequences that has for the environment. So whether that's, again, nutrient loss to our water bodies, or the loss of biodiversity, you know, in my opinion, those are very important concerns that need to be addressed. And organic agriculture is a way to mitigate some of those environmental impacts. And so a system where we're deriving more benefits from a more intact ecological system supporting crop growth rather than relying on fertilizer and pest control products brought from other places to do those needed services in a crop field. I think that's a direction that agriculture is going to need to move as quickly as possible, given the challenges that we're facing.
Dr. Keene went on to offer an example of this reactive versus systems approach.
You know, so thinking about herbicides and the problem that we have with herbicide resistance in some very problematic weeds, you know, that developed as a direct result of overuse of certain modes of action. You know, to me, it's then a little bit challenging to continue to think about herbicides as the most effective tool in the long term for managing weeds. Because I mean, I think it's a mix of practices. Even with conventional farmers I work with, you know, rotating modes of action, being more strategic about what you apply and when, and making sure you have a diversity of active ingredients. I mean, I think that speaks to the tendency that we have, you know, to want to find like the solution to a problem. Like, is the solution to weed control glyphosate? Is the solution to low yields more nitrogen? And that's too simple for the management of a dynamic biological system. And so whether you're in conventional or organic, we need to be thinking about a bigger toolbox. And in organic, because the toolbox doesn't have synthetic pesticides and fertilizers, then we're using, I wouldn't say fewer tools, we're just using different tools to address the issues of weed management and pest management and fertility.
So when we do organic research, we're really having to focus on the entire system. Unlike conventional research, which can set up a lot of controls in experimentation and just focus on, say, yield or a certain mechanism in breeding, with organics, we really have to look at the whole system, and that is fundamentally just a different way of doing research. And so I think we want to highlight that when we're talking about how is research in organic set up and how do we fairly compare it to conventional?
Absolutely. I spoke with Dr. Martin Boone, who shared some surprising research results along these same lines. He's a plant breeder at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and he focuses on developing corn varieties for organic farming systems.
So one of my colleagues, she is a microbiologist in our sister department of natural resource management. So she is the expert in soil microbiomes. And I'm interested in root structures of corn, how corn develops roots and how these roots are then utilized by the plant to access nutrients and water in the soil. So we came together and, you know, we asked the question, how do plants interact with this microbiome? Is the composition of the microbiome changing as a function of the corn hybrid that is grown in that specific spot? And we started to look into this by first getting soils from the field and putting these into pots in the greenhouse. And we selected hybrids that were kind of important in the 50s, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And we evaluated these in these soils that we got from the field. And we evaluated the performance of the plants, and my colleague actually looked into the changes in the microbiome. And we were focusing specifically on the microbes that are involved in the nitrogen cycle. So where are the nitrifiers, where are the denitrifiers, and how do they change in composition according to the plants or the hybrids that are growing in these spots? And we found that over the decades, the number of nitrifiers were changed by the hybrids. So we had a positive relationship at the early hybrids. They actually increased the nitrifiers within their root system environment. So there were more nitrogen fixing bacteria, you know, available in these root systems. Whereas in the modern hybrids, we didn't find that. here, actually, there was the trend that the denitrifiers actually increased, and they are involved in the leaching of the nitrogen into lower parts of the soil. And we studied this further because, as I mentioned, that's an interaction. So the plants need to, in order to change the, you know, the microbiome, they have to provide the microbiome with some chemicals that promote their growth. So to make the long story short, what we deduced was that over time, in the development of our modern hybrids, we lost some ability of the plants to positively interact with the microbiome. And it might be necessary to go back in order to recover these characteristics that we might want to see in our hybrids, so that actually have these positive impacts on the microbiome. You know, the interesting thing is these effects might be small per plant, but when we grow millions and billions of corn plants in the Midwest each summer, so overall, the effect might be huge that we can reach with these changes in the microbiome and these interactions.
I've got to say that as a farmer, that sort of research really just gets me so excited, because that's the sort of research that means we're able to address a lot of these questions about, do we get enough yield? How do we move forward on ultimately making organics a more profitable, viable system so more people can jump into it?
Yeah, there is a lot of scientific research going on in organics that's investigating critical and complex questions. But a lot of those critical and complex questions are needing to be asked directly as a result of some of the consequences of conventional practices and decades of conventional practices. And, you know, when I think about why that is, it really seems to boil down to the framework that underlies conventional ag research. And that framework was created as a response to conditions of the world, you know, over the last century. Conventional agriculture's main focus and driving the questions that it asked was to increase productivity, particularly as measured by yield. Yield gains equals more productivity equals more hungry people fed. And that was addressing the most critical issues of the day, you know, global food shortages and hunger.
And I am not one to sit idly by and see man breed himself into a corner by increasing his numbers faster than food production is being increased.
Norman Borlaug really comes to mind, and his research into hybridization, you know, developing hybrid vigor, getting more yield out of the same plants. And his goal was to feed more people, and his research and the techniques that he developed saved more lives than almost any other technological advancement in human history. But it led ag research down a very narrow path where it ignored some of the additional foundational effects that agriculture has on human and environmental well-being, like water quality, soil impairment, habitat depletion. Research in the organic industry has really sought to build upon the research triumphs of plant breeders and agronomists in the conventional side, while also taking into account for the environmental and human health sacrifices that have resulted from the current conventional agriculture paradigm.
And so if we look at that entire whole systems approach that research has to take in organics, one thing that we kind of have to back up and look at is that in order to get farmers to do these practices, there needs to be some sort of reward on the other side. If we're going to expect farmers to have lower yields and take a whole systems approach that's not just focusing on maximizing yield and maximizing inputs, we're going to need some sort of incentive. And so the National Organic Program ultimately was set up to provide that market-based incentive for organic farmers to engage in these practices. And so when we put these rules in place that prescribe what practices are allowed in organics, that's an opportunity to systematically communicate what those rules are via this seal, this National Organic Program seal. And so when customers are buying organic programs, they know that the products they're buying are meeting their expectations. And so that is directly an opportunity to support farmers who are doing this whole systems approach and give consumers a product they want in ultimately making a free market solution to this idea.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. But interestingly, I think that this is the source of a lot of the skepticism around anti-science mentality in organic. And that it's born from the perception that this comprehensive list of do's and don'ts is too restrictive. And it causes, in practice, because there is that market-based incentive, that it in practice causes farmers and the system to lose some of that original philosophical intent of whole systems approach and looking at all of the externalities and accounting for them, because now there's a profit incentive to be aiming for. And so I spoke to a researcher who holds some of that perspective, and I'll let him introduce himself.
I'm Dr. Jonathan Lundgren. I am the director of ICDISIS Foundation, I'm an entomologist and an agroecologist. I study insects and kind of where they fit within greater farming systems. But I'm also a farmer and a beekeeper and a rancher, a shepherd of sorts. So wear a lot of hats there. I worked for the USDA for around 11 years and received a presidential award for being one of the top young scientists in the country prior to leaving that and starting something totally new. About 5 years ago, we decided that we needed to use science to transform our food system, and that transforming our food system isn't just for the producers or the consumers, but it's also in how we apply science. And so we've been trying to rethink how agricultural science is conducted in ways that sort of fosters macro evolutionary change as opposed to just small increments of change to our food system. So ICDISIS Foundation and Blue Dasher Farm is my current affiliation there.
Dr. Lundgren argues that the process of labeling creates a system of boxes to check rather than a set of principles to farm by.
So labeling a system is a real challenge, and labeling organic is a real challenge. And because what ends up happening is that you have to focus on the practical aspects of the system that represent the principles that are driving a particular agricultural movement. So organic had a very noble set of principles at the beginning, and a suite of practices were selected that were intended to attain those principles. What happens with the naming or labeling endeavors is that we tend to focus so much on the practices that we ignore the principles. And so now you can find industrialized organic. Yes, you're right. You're abandoning pesticides. You're checking all of the boxes of all of those practices, but it's not reflecting organic principles well.
Dr. Lundgren has direct experience with the difficulty of documenting a set of practices that closely matches with the philosophy that those practices are trying to achieve. He's currently in the process of drafting a framework for another philosophy of agriculture called regenerative farming.
I mean, we just tried this, right? We looked into what naming schemes there are for regenerative right now. And there was one of these standards that was like, this is 52 pages worth of questions. And it's like, boy, that's prohibitive. Sure, it increases the precision of what you're trying to do, but is it working? Does it actually, I mean, have we looked at these things and actually compared what an organic system is supposed to do besides reducing pesticide residues or something like this in the food output? Does it increase nutrient density? Does it increase soil health? I mean, there's a parsimony is what we use in science when creating models, right? And they're intended to be as simple as they need to be to attain the function. And what you have here is a very non-parsimonious model. This is prohibitively complicated. And I don't think that it needs to be. When you start listing all of these things, you've lost why you're doing it.
What Dr. Lundgren is advocating for is using science to determine what the outcomes and effects of farming practices are. And that is how you measure results.
So Mallory, I've been certified organic for about 12 years now. And I think the thing that keeps me most excited about being certified is that I see that NOP certification as a baseline. It's something that we can use to guarantee our practices to the consumers so they know how we farm. But really, when we think about our actual day-to-day farming, we should be doing so much more than just the respective constricted rules that are written down in the law. And so I think when I talk to most of my farming friends, they don't even really consider, you know, the restrictions placed on their farming by the standards. Rather, they're thinking about how can I thrive and grow so much bigger than just, you know, farming to the letter of the law? How can I ultimately make my system bigger, more profitable, more dynamic? If we were just trying to comply with the standards, it would be nothing more than a race to the bottom of who can do the standards the cheapest. But instead, if we're thinking about the standards as just a, you know, a simple framework in which we work on our day-to-day, that means there's so much room for innovation and so much possibility for going well above and beyond the standards.
That's a really great point, Nate. But to make sure that the farmer is making the right decisions that lead to that highest order outcome that we all agree, that philosophical end goal of a whole systems approach and accounting for all of the externalities that agriculture has involved with it, we can't just rely on standards alone, a prescribed set of practices, because that doesn't exist in organics. It's not possible to create a prescribed set of practices. But really what is needed to ensure that farmers are achieving that highest philosophical outcome is education. Education about why to choose particular scientifically informed practices to achieve that outcome. And that's what Dr. Lundgren is arguing is the most important.
I think we need to be very careful about banning, because what ends up happening is that there's a perceived need for these pesticides. And if we ban them, then they will be replaced by something else that may or may not be better than what was just banned. And accompanying restrictions on use of pesticides with those education programs that point out, you know what, cover crops work real well against insect pests, crop rotations, field margins, livestock integration. These are really valuable tools that increase the resilience of your operation while also combating pests.
So you probably know what I'm going to say next, and I love the expertise that we've tapped for the beginning of this episode, but did you happen to reach out to any farmers to get their take on this topic?
Yes, I did, Nate. I reached out to Bryce Earlbeck. He's a farmer in Iowa, and he and his family manage about 4,000 acres organically. You know, I find Bryce to be a really good example of a farmer who takes data-driven decisions with the outcome, that ultimate outcome in mind.
We grow a bunch of different crops when we started out. I've grown corn, soybeans, oats, barley, alfalfa, rye, wheat, peas, canola, and I'm probably forgetting a few in there. So we started with a wide blast to figure out what was going to work. And I can tell you, we're about down to alfalfa and corn. We're playing with a little bit of different rotations, but we've really learned keeping it simple. And it goes back into these sciences that I think really brings out the point of what we've learned is that rotation is science. It's one of those sciences you don't have to pay for. It's one of those things I call information and knowledge that is pretty cheap once you learn it. Rotating alfalfa and corn, I don't need BT. I don't need Roundup. I take care of weeds. I provide a lot of the nitrogen. There's a very high chance I don't need fungicide in that rotation. And so that's the science we use on our farm. Now, if I'm just a corn, soybean, and organic, yeah, that you need the technologies and science that the conventional has to do it. But if you truly have a rotation and understand the science of rotation, a lot of those costs can be eliminated.
So clearly, Bryce takes a very scientific approach to his operation when thinking about how to employ different practices. In fact, he finds so much value in using data to make his farming decisions that he founded a digital platform and agronomy consulting business called AgriSecure. And with that business, he's developed a technology to help farmers put outcomes at the forefront of their decision making.
Me and a few other partners that also farm organic and in quite large scale, we quickly learned that all the data and information we're trying to capture, trying to do for organic certification and all those things in between were quite strenuous and hard to do. I mean, we did it and we went through it and we got it done. But for all those hours of work, and including me and people that work with me and people that work with them, we really had no benefit out of it. We didn't learn anything from all this information we were putting in a shoebox or a binder or different things like that. We were able to bring that into a digitalized form, do it a lot more efficient than what we were doing it, and then be able to utilize that data to understand what was working on our organic farm, what isn't working, and not worry about the certification process anymore. It kind of just happens with AgriSecure and the way that it's set up and that digital platform and the consultants behind it to make it happen. Then take that data and be able to better understand what's going on.
So when we think about what we heard from Dr. Lundgren as far as the criticism of the standards, but also that ultimately to make this system work, we need more education. When I listen to how Bryce describes the work he and his group are doing, that's really the education farmers need. That's the data-driven support that's going to make this whole system work. Bryce doesn't seem to be worried about the regulations. He's worried about how do you make the most out of farming organically and how do you spread that knowledge to customer farmers?
Absolutely, Nate. And we need so much more of this service in the organic industry. Organic farmers are hungry for guidance and support to help them achieve the highest philosophical aims of the organic system. And, you know, after talking to Dr. Lundgren and hearing the criticisms that he had about that organic certification system, I wanted to see what Bryce thought. You know, Bryce is a farmer and a consultant. And so I asked him what he thought of the organic certification system. And he said all of it is worth it. That learning curve, the time commitment, the strict rules, all of it is worth it. Because it gives his customers the confidence that they need to know that what they're getting when they pay that organic premium is what they're paying for.
This is one of the things everybody struggles with when they become organic, is now some of the rules don't make sense until you get 4 or 5 years in. For example, one of the things that our partners and we always said is, you know, after coming after 4 years of alfalfa, and me going and plowing up a good soil that we built over the last 4 years by getting structure into it through the alfalfa, getting aeration into it. And, you know, I will have to go do deep tillage to kill it. You know, 1 year of Roundup out of every 9 years, is that detrimental to destroying the soil? No, those are the things that we look at that, you know, personally, I believe that, yeah, 1 year of Roundup would not hurt out of 10 years if I didn't destroy the soil where I was farming. And do that. But the rules are there to allow people that are good managers that have the information and knowledge and learning and want to do things better for the most part. Now, not everything's 100% better. Don't get me wrong. There's some rules in there that are there for much broader reasons than what we look at. But if we had more relaxed rules, people would not get paid to learn and to understand and to better manage. We would be conventional farming again if everything was just as simple as going out and spraying something. So I can see both sides. I can understand. But the way that it's set up is better for the farmers that want to do it and want to do it right.
So it seems like for Bryce that this 5-year learning period is a pretty crucial learning curve, and that over time he sees the value of the practices and understands better the connection between the practices and the outcomes he's ultimately aiming for. I know from my own experience that I would echo that 5-year learning curve. I think that we really hone in on, oh, I'm going to get through the transition and then I'm going to be organic. And honestly, that is just not quite the finish line, because you need a few years of being organic and running through your whole crop rotation and kind of working out the kinks before you feel like you've got it and you can run with this. So as you get deeper into being comfortable with being certified organic and raising organic crops, I think you do look to how can I improve? And so I'd be really interested in how science and research have changed the way Bryce farms. What's the future goal of how he's hoping to farm?
Yeah, I think understanding how manure interacts with the soil, how we apply manure, how we apply compost, the difference between those, the biological systems in the soil is where the advancements are going to come. Because And I think it's going to come on the conventional side, too, is, I mean, the writing's on the wall. We're going to have to reduce inputs, reduce, you know, runoff, all those type of things. No matter where we're at in the next 10 years, that's one thing we can pretty well guarantee is going to happen. So in organic, we're seeing how to better utilize manure, when to apply it, how to apply it. Do we work it in? Is there a cover crop? Those type of information we need. Going down to what type of manure, compost, turkey, chicken, those type of manures, how much do we actually need to grow a crop? And when we bring those rotations in, so after alfalfa, we can cut our manure into almost a third of what we're doing that we've gathered on our farm. So we're at the point we're not diving into this space here, or this inch here, or this inch here on the field, but it's more on a high level technology right now that, as always, we see it, it'll get narrowed down in the next years coming forward that I think will become more precise in precision agriculture, whether it's robotic weed control, things like that come along. We'll see those technologies get more narrowed and more specific into the future. And we're monitoring those and following those as they come along. So.
This is just the beginning. There is so much exciting research going on in organics, Nate, and I'm just so happy that someone like Bryce is already seeing results of cutting-edge research on crop rotation. But this is all still unfolding. You know, I'm curious, Nate, you're a farmer. How have you used research results in your farm to make your decisions?
Well, you know, Mallory, I mentioned previously that a lot of farmers across Montana have started to take on companion cropping, where we plant yellow sweet clover along with our spring wheat. And by doing so, we eliminate that spring tillage event for planting. We plant them at the same time. We harvest one, the other starts growing right away without a tillage intervention. I think that what we sometimes fail to acknowledge is we're only doing that because there's been a lot of research that's gone into that system. And so companion planting in general is sort of a new thing in Montana. I think historically there's been a bit of it, but we had a big long period where we really wanted just wheat in a field. So the research that's gone into companion planting has ultimately enabled farmers to, with confidence, take on these practices.
Yeah, Dr. Keene really echoed this. We're not in the same place as conventional with respect to the amount of research that's been dedicated to organics so far. And there are still huge advances being made.
I think it is true that we haven't had as many researchers working on organic agriculture as have worked on conventional systems for the past 60, 70 years. But we do have many researchers with very well-respected and rigorous programs at a number of universities around the country, starting to dive into the details of organic crop nutrition and management. And some things that do come to mind, certainly on the front of weed control, people doing the same kind of small plot replicated research that's used, well, that is the standard in all agronomic research to look at organic specific management questions. So things like cover crop suppression of weeds, combining cover crops with things like a high residue cultivator, comparing different kinds of tillage tools, rotary hose, harrows, cultivators, things like that. On the precision front, there's a lot of very interesting work being done with precision weed tools for things that have optical sensors on them that are able to see weeds or distinguish weeds from crops and then target the control of those weeds with something like a knife other implement to kill the weed, but leave the crop alone. And that's really at a cutting edge of the integration of optical digital technology with a mechanical form of weed control. Also thinking about where is there exciting scientific research being done in the organic space with the use of crop rotations and cover crops for crop nutrition. There's a lot of interest in figuring out how to predict the mineralization of nitrogen and other nutrients from cover crops and soil organic matter to predict what's available for the cash crop. Because again, yes, so a common critique of organic is that, well, you'll never have enough nitrogen for your crop. You'll always have a nitrogen deficient crop. And in conventional systems, there's not a lot of nitrogen in that system other than the fertilizer, the synthetic fertilizer that's being applied growing season after growing season. But if you're, again, in an organic system and being really conscientious about your crop rotation and rotating, you know, an alfalfa crop with corn and then maybe soybean and a small grain and thinking about nitrogen use in building soil organic matter, then you have these pools of different forms of nitrogen in the soil. And they're not all readily available like the synthetic fertilizer is, but if you're building that reservoir of carbon and nitrogen in the soil, then there will be more available over time. And that's a very complex system. And so that's where a lot of research is focused now on the, certainly the, call it the environmental conditions under which mineralization is promoted, also the soil microbial communities involved in that, and then also just trying to predict nutrient availability from soil pools and then also from cover crop residues to subsequent cash crops to help organic farmers not only make better decisions about, you know, how much can they rely on their system for nitrogen, but then also if they have access to animal manures, how much animal manure then to apply to supplement the nitrogen and other nutrients that they're getting from their crop rotation and cover crops.
It's important that these research programs gain more visibility.
You know, the perceptions of organic as anti-science largely stems from the prohibition on pesticides and fertilizers, these modern tools of conventional agriculture. But when I think about that statement, I mean, I know that it's not true because you have some really excellent scientists at well-respected universities and nonprofits doing rigorous scientific research using organic methods. And I think that that just doesn't have a lot of visibility or maybe isn't well known. But again, many of these programs are newer, and so they don't have as long a history as research in the conventional space, and people may not just be aware of it.
I want to point out that Dr. Keen just got to the heart of this episode. The perception that organic is anti-science stems from viewing the organic standards as just solely prohibitions against these modern scientific tools like pesticides and fertilizers. But I want to emphasize that this is a very narrow view. It looks at agriculture as solely chemistry and inputs, and it ignores all of the tools that organic agriculture has developed to thrive in reciprocity with nature.
And I think that Mallory, is one of the most exciting parts, that recognizing that we do have a lot of tools in our toolbox. They're just younger. They haven't been as perfected as the chemistry side of conventional. And I think when we look at the drag and yield and overall characteristic deficits in organic crops, one thing we can really be putting a lot of time and resources and energy into is organic seed breeding. And how do we breed for crops that are well suited to organic production?
I asked Dr. Boone about the tools available to organic plant breeders and what we can look forward to as more work is done in this area.
Farmers have very specific needs with regard to hybrids or other cultivars that they grow. You know, they want that the hybrids that they grow are resistant, because they don't have the luxury of spraying whenever something happens. So we are working here, for example, in natural resistance against the Western corn rootworm, for example. It's very difficult because some of these resistances are highly quantitative. So there are a lot of genes involved that have small effects. And in order to collect all these genes into one genotype, you know, that takes time and is complex. So therefore, I think identifying these genes in our cultivars and then utilizing them in our breeding programs, that's of great importance. Then, you know, we need to develop cultivars that have a rapid youth development. The spring is always variable. Sometimes it's cold and rainy. Sometimes it's, you know, even snowy here in the Midwest. So if you want to grow something, that it needs to have a rapid youth development. And this is also of specific importance for managing weeds. So plants, you know, in organic fields need to develop rapidly in order to be competitive right from the get-go. Lodging resistance in corn is important, and in other grains. We need to develop cultivars that are nitrogen use efficient. And what are the characteristics in plants that we need to change in order to make them nutrient use efficient? So a lot of research goes into this in order to figure out, you know, what are the plant idiotypes that we need to look for that actually carry these characteristics.
So that's really interesting when we think about that the needs of organic seed and varieties is functionally different. And so is organic breeding different between conventional and organic?
Yes. Organic breeding is more complicated in some ways than conventional breeding because we're trying to breed in protective traits into our seeds that are responsive to the environment that already exists. While the conventional plant breeders are placing modified traits directly into the genetics of their varietals to have that plant optimized for an environment that they're creating with their whole package of chemical inputs. And so it's more complex on the organic side because we're trying to work within more dynamic variables and using inherent genetic traits within the crops to amplify them through traditional breeding techniques.
I think each farm is its special environment, you know, and the question as a breeder is, how do you breed for that many diverse environments that we observe in the organic landscape? For conventional breeders, this is pretty simple in a way. You know, they develop corn hybrids for environments, for the Midwest, for Illinois, for certain maturity regions. And then, or it seems so, that they use this hybrid and then the environment is made perfect for growing that hybrid. And this is not possible in organic. So in organic, we need to develop crops that are positively exploiting interactions with the soil and the climate. And that takes a lot of effort and time. And I think in the US, we are right at the starting point of focusing on the development of these improved cultivars for organic that are closing the gap.
Dr. Brune emphasizes that we need to be investing heavily and quickly into the very different approach that is organic plant breeding before it's too late.
You know, we need to change things. So I think in this situation, we need to think of how to produce that what we need in a more regenerative way. You'll be very smart about exploiting these interactions that plants naturally build with their environment. And these interactions, you know, they make me very excited about that, what I do. So, you know, in our yield trials, we have corn that produces 350 bushels on an average. And it's amazing, 350 bushels. And the question is, how can we utilize that potential in a more ecological, sustainable manner? So I want that we produce corn here without destroying our environment. And there are also studies that look at the health of farmers. The health situation of farmers is not good. There's a lot of stress, a lot of depression. You know, there's a lot of exposure to chemicals, and it's not necessary. That needs to change. And this year, again, I can only speak for my nursery. I was surprised that there were no bugs. There are no insects. There are not even bad insects. There's no Western corn rootworm beetle flying around. I didn't see a single butterfly. I didn't see spiders. And I think the way we do agriculture has consequences, and they are not positive. And I think we need to change this. And doing the change also creates opportunities. And I think organic farmers, at least the farmers we are collaborating with, they already grabbed, you know, some of these opportunities. And there are also opportunities for other farmers. And not everybody needs to be an organic farmer, but you know, farmers need to be rethinking the way they do things.
So we covered a lot of ground in this episode. In summary, what would you say the takeaways are?
Well, Nate, I would say that I've got three main takeaways for this episode. The first is that organic is not farming like it's 100 years ago and like Grandpa did, because we have made so many advances when we look at the whole systems approach of agriculture. You know, organic is dealing with dynamic environments and many complexities of trying to work in reciprocity with nature. And we're using science to really solve these challenges head on. My second takeaway is that organic is not just about prohibitions. We are all about building a set of tools that aims for that highest philosophy of organics and also gives farmers what they need to manage their farms productively and profitably. And the third and final takeaway that I would offer is that we really need more investment in organic research to get us where we want to be, because we're just at the beginning. Organic is very new when it comes to the last 100 years of applying scientific rigor to advancements in agriculture. And so we've got a lot of work to do, and we're doing that work.
So not only is organics not anti-science, really organics is embracing research and progress in a real way. And that there is this acknowledgement that there's so much research and work to do still, that organics is full steam ahead and really quite forward looking.
Yes. And, you know, that forward looking quality of organics has enabled Bryce to be forward looking on his own family farm, because farming organically has allowed him to see a future for his family farm.
For us, it's finally getting paid for the knowledge that we have. At the end of the day, when our family looked at our bottom line and what kind of business we were able to have and what kind of conservation we were able to do and the things that we wanted to do on our farm, science wasn't actually making our farm that much better. It was farming the farmer. It was taking money from us. The companies that sold it to us were taking 99% of the value, and we were getting 1%. Where does that leave us? So yes, there's science that you can use in organic and conventional, and some things are good. But at the end of the day, for our family farming decision, it didn't leave us with much left to do the things that we wanted to do on the farm. We feel good at the end of the day about what we're doing and what we're accomplishing, and we're seeing a path forward to make it another generation on the farm that we just weren't seeing 5 years ago, 6 years ago. It seemed like the farm was going to die. I was going to get an off-farm job, and you know that was going to be the end of it. It doesn't seem like that now.
That was episode 3 of The Dirt on Organic Farming, a new podcast by the Organic Agronomy Training Service. OATS provides organic grain production training to agronomists, advisors, and crop consultants so that farmers will have better access to reliable, science-based advice for their unique farm operation. Special thanks to Bryce Earlbeck, Drs. Martin Boone, Jonathan Lundgren, and Claire Keene. This episode was produced by Michaela Elias. For more information, go to www.organicagronomy.org. OATS is brought to you with funding support from Clif Bar. Clif Bar's journey to use organic ingredients started in 2003. We've learned along the journey that organic can be a catalyst for good. It is key to creating a healthier, more just, and sustainable food system for all of us. Organic farming is good for people and the planet. We've also learned that organic farming is innovative and can play a critical role in feeding a growing world. In order to do that, organic has to continue to improve. That's why we are the number one private funder of organic research in the US and fund projects like OATS. We are proud to be working along with all of you to ensure that organic is here to stay for good and for generations to come. OATS is brought to you with funding support from King Arthur Baking Company, who has been sharing the joy of baking since 1790. A certified B Corp, headquartered in Vermont, King Arthur is the ultimate baking resource, providing the highest quality ingredients for the most delicious baked goods. As a 100% employee-owned baking company, we believe in the power of baking to make a difference for our employee owners, the larger baking community, and the planet. We strive to be a force for good in all that we do, from cultivating a workplace that embraces differences and prioritizes trust, to teaching children across the country how to bake bread from scratch, to partnering with farmers and suppliers who share our vision for a greener planet. OATS is a programmatically independent consortium that is fiscally sponsored by the Organic Trade Association. OTA serves as an anchor funder for OATS through its industry-invested Grow Organic Research, Promotion, and Education Program. Grow Organic's Technical Assistance Program area seeks to meet goals of scalability, regional, and production system diversity in technical assistance for organic and transitioning farmers nationwide. Top donors to the Grow Organic Technical Assistance Program area help make OATS possible. Thank you to General Mills, Clif Bar, Stonyfield, King Arthur Baking Company, and Organic Valley. I'm Mallory Krieger.
And I'm Nate Palapalm.
Till next time, thanks for listening.